Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey, bosses, this is Johnny, and welcome to episode 120 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm here in Kharkiv, Ukraine. And Sam, are you in Tampa, or are you?
Not as interesting as you, buddy, but yep, I'm in Tampa, Florida.
Okay. Yeah, nice to hear that.
But wait, how did you get to Kharkiv? I've never even heard of this. I thought you were in Kiev.
No, I took a train from Kharkiv to Kiev because I had this is my third time now in Ukraine. The first time was with you. Mm-hmm. Last summer I came and I spent some time in Kiev and then Odessa. And this year I decided, hey, let's check out a different city that I haven't been to. So let's go to Kharkiv.
Wow, that's really interesting. And for all the listeners, Johnny, when he called me this morning, he was on video and his mm-hmm. video was all blurry in the background. I'm like, wow, that looks super suave. Like, yeah, where are you? Yeah. You must be in a really nice co-working space or something. He's like, no, I'm in like a USSR dungeon condo, but Skype's got this new setting where you blur the background. It looks really fancy.
Yeah. Like I'm so excited to use this now on every call, but like, yeah, I'm in this fancy swanky office with orange shelves in the back, but really just, I think just old.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's a handy utility that'll come and be a useful tool for so many listeners out there. I'm going to start using it for sure.
Yeah. I love it. So yeah, unfortunately it is freezing here in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I think it's been like 9 degrees, which I think is like 40 or 50. And it's been very cold.
Summer starts late up there, man. You got to wait till July, actually.
Yeah, well, what's funny is we had a taste of it. So when I first arrived, it was really cold. It was the same, like 10 degrees. Then for a week, we had super good weather. We had like 24 degrees, which is, you know, like in its 80s. It was sunny. It was beautiful. And it's like, Ukraine is great. I'm so glad I came. And then this entire week, it's been freezing again.
Wow. Well, I just booked my ticket to Lithuania. I arrive May 26th for one full month. So I'm super pumped. It'll probably still be pretty cold then. But hey, we're only a country apart, Johnny. Belarus divides us. Sounds like a good meeting point.
That is true. But unfortunately, aside from flying into Belarus, there's no way to get a visa. So I can't take a train over. So we're going to have to talk after this about where to meet. Maybe logistics. I'll go to Lithuania.
The Baltics and Eastern Europe logistics, always a fun one to navigate.
Yeah, but that's what makes it exciting. But one hard place to get to is actually Belize. And it's quite unbelievable that you've actually been there.
You better believe it. Better believe it. It's not actually difficult to get to at all. There's lots of direct flights to Belize City. Oh, at least from North America. I don't know from Ukraine.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know from Europe how easy is it to get there. But
for all the diving that you do, I'm sure you've been to Belize.
No, so I was very close to Belize. I was in Utila and Roatan, mm-hmm. which are two islands in the Caribbean, but it's part of Honduras. And I was there for 2 months. And I remember thinking, okay, you know, maybe I should go somewhere else in Central America. But every single backpacker I met was like, yeah, don't go to Belize. It's overpriced. It's expensive. It's nice, but it's expensive. Go to Guatemala instead. And so I never went.
Huh. Well, I mean, that's unfortunate that turned you away, because I was just thinking of like lobster prices and stuff when I was in Belize. And I would say it's not expensive, but it's not as cheap as Guatemala. But then again, if you want as cheap as Guatemala, there's only kind of a handful of places in the world you can go. So maybe you shouldn't have listened to their advice. You'll have to get back at some point.
Yeah, but at that time, I was legitimately broke. I think I had spent my last $2,000 to get there and do my diving instructor's training course with this terrible company, Utila Dive Center. Do not recommend these guys. And I was like, you know, I was like, I'm stuck here. I have no money to go anywhere else. And there's no way I would have been able to afford like doing all the cool stuff I wanted to do in Belize. Like the diving the blue hole is what, a couple $100. There's no way I would have been able to afford it at the time.
Man, I've been, all those islands down there are great. I've been to Utila, Roatan. I prefer the islands of Belize, honestly. We'll talk about that on the show, I guess.
Yeah. I'm excited to check this out because I think Belize is one of those countries that is in the U.S. time zone and it's up and coming. So there's a ton of potential opportunities there, but it's something that no one ever talks about. So Let's have on Mitchell on the show. Let's hear a little bit about why we should invest in Belize potentially. And then let's you and I catch up on the outro to talk about if we would actually do it.
Sounds great. Let's hear it from Will Mitchell himself. Will, welcome to the show, my man. Thanks for joining us.
And Sam, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to bring a bunch of good information to your listeners today. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. The first question is, why are you in Toronto? It's April. It's a beautiful time of the year to be down in Belize. You're missing all the joy down there. You're up there fighting off the rest of your polar winter in Toronto.
I know, man. I'm literally suffering up here, looking out the window, seeing a dreary day. I'm used to being on the island down in Belize. But we have a lot of investor conferences, a lot of investor groups we speak to. So sometimes duty calls and we have to leave paradise, unfortunately.
Well, I'm pumped up to talk about Belize generally and, of course, real estate opportunities down there. I went to Belize for the first time, actually the only time, about 8 or 9 years ago. And as I was reading your book, all these things were replaying in my mind about opportunity, growth, how wonderful it is down there. I've been dying to get back down there. How much time have you spent down in Belize over the course of your lifetime?
So I've been going to Belize my entire life. And for the past 6 years, it's kind of been the heaviest involvement in Belize. For pretty much 6 years, I've been almost full time, aside from these little, you know, weekends where we go speak abroad. But man, I'm sure so much has changed in those 9 years since you were down. Kind of just interesting. When the island was first developed, there was about 4 hotels. And this is a little bit longer than 9 years ago, but you could literally go to any one of those hotels. The credit would be transferred if you bought something to your hotel. And if you got too drunk and passed out on the beach, then one of the police officers would pick you up in a golf cart and drive you back to your hotel. So, you know, we've came a long way from that point now, but there's still a ton of growth that's happening. So it's one of the most exciting times to be down in Belize.
Maybe we can give the listeners a little bit of a layout of the landscape of Belize, because I think when we talk about Belize and a lot of stuff that we'll talk about on this episode, we're really focusing on the islands, right? Not so much the mainland.
Yeah. So from an investment standpoint, I always focus on the island, and I can get into some micro details on why that is down the line. I'll give you kind of just the overview points of why that is. In our market, from an investment standpoint, there's two kind of big foundation pillars that drive the market, which is tourism. And the island receives, or the largest island, Ambergris Key, receives over 70% of the overnight tourism arrivals. The second big foundation pillar we have is the baby boomers. And we're also the largest recipient of baby boomers and expats. So when we're looking at investing in real estate, we need people that A, are gonna go down and rent those units, and B, people that are gonna be actively investing in the market. That's why 100% of my focus from an investment standpoint is on the islands. But you know, if you're looking at the landscape of the whole country has so much to offer, like these amazing lush jungles. I'm not sure if when you were down, you did any kind of zip lining tours or horseback riding through the jungle. That stuff is amazing. White, beautiful white sand inlets, hundreds of islands you can go boating to, the second largest barrier reef in the Western Hemisphere. So it really has a massive diversity of things to offer. And that's why the tourism market is so strong.
Well, I know you have to be a little bit more politically correct on this episode because you're probably involved with government and stuff down there, but Belize City is not a place that I want to spend a significant amount of time. The islands, on the other hand, are beautiful.
For sure, man. Honestly, the cruise ships porting in the city is kind of tough because people go down, a lot of these cruise travelers, and that's the reason why I don't even really mention them, because they port in the city, they get off the cruise ship, they look around, they're like, all right, I really don't want to be in Belize City. They don't really have time to get to the islands. Maybe they can go on some adventure tour and see a little bit more, but it doesn't really whet their appetite to explore the best parts of the country. That's why when you look at Belize, there's three ways travelers come. The first way is kind of the ground travelers who are driving in. Generally, they're domestic travelers. They kind of drive through. The second would be those cruise travelers. They don't have a big impact on our real estate market because, like you said, they port in Belize City. And I'm not sure, did you spend a bunch of time down in Belize City when you were there, Sam?
I just passed through. I literally went there, ported, got on a bus, and then took a bus to Flores. I think Flores is Guatemala, right across the border.
Yep.
And yeah, it's like Tikal area, for the Tikal ruins, I guess.
So yeah, like most people don't even do that, right? They just kind of get off, look around Belize City, and they're just like, all right, this is not for me. But the islands are just so different. They're so beautiful, and there's so much more in the country that people really should be seeing.
For sure. So I actually just recently looked at a map, and how do you pronounce it? Ambergris Cay, right?
Yeah. Ambergris Cay. It's spelled like a key, like a key to open a door.
Key. Got it. And that's part of the Key Calker Islands?
So Key Calker is an island just south of Ambergris Cay. Ambergris Cay is the largest island in Belize. It's 24 miles long, 3 miles wide at the widest point. It's kind of a long island. I guess you could say it's shaped like a cigar. Mm-hmm. And just off the coastline, the reason why it's so popular, about 400 yards off the coastline is where the barrier reef is located. So in terms of proximity to the reef, we're right by it. You can go out in the morning if like the fishing is amazing, the diving is amazing. You can do every kind of fishing you could possibly imagine in one day. Go out, do some reef fishing, go behind the reef, do some deep sea fishing, go to the leeward side of the island, do some fly fishing. If you have a spear, throw it in, do some spear fishing. So the islands just really have so much to offer. When you were down, did you actually make it down to the islands, or you just kind of hit the city and went south?
No, I actually took a boat from Chetumal, Mexico.
I was just in Chetumal.
I can't pronounce any of these places. Yeah, I took a ferry from there, landed, I think, in Key Calker, and then did San Pedro and Key Calker. And I forget the difference in the two, but for any of the listeners out there, I was actually just down in Playa del Carmen a couple of weeks ago, and I was looking at a map, and I'm like, wow, actually, Ambergris Cay is basically an extension of, if you go from Cancun to Playa del Carmen down to Tulum, and you go Tulum south or what looks like a couple hours, you would hit Ambergris Cay. Isn't that correct?
That's pretty much exactly right. And it's kind of interesting with regards to the island. Like back in the days when the Mayans were around, they carved this kind of ever so slight canal that is now the divider between Belize and Mexico on the island, because otherwise it would almost connect by land. When the British kind of came in, they were very strategic with this, and they made that channel a little bit bigger to make sure that that would be part of Belize as opposed to Mexico. And that's kind of the reason why it's a separate island now, but it almost touches Mexico. So you're exactly right on that, Sam. Dude, that's funny you were just there, man.
Yeah. I had read your book, I probably would have darted straight down.
Honestly, 2 weeks ago, I was in Mexico too. I was in Chetumal because they have some like bigger department stores. On the island, we don't have like, you know, Walmart and McDonald's and stuff like that. And that actually gives people a pretty good idea of where we are in the scheme of time. Like right. We don't have a single franchise fast food restaurant on the island. And it's not because you're not allowed to do that. It's just because that's where we are in the scheme of time of development. So, you know, it's a very strategic time to be involved in Belize with these things not having arrived yet and the tourism numbers growing at the rates they're growing.
Hmm. Wild. So when I was just getting out of high school, I read the book, The Secret. Very popular book, I'm sure, with a lot of the listeners. And I was reading a newspaper, and there was this incredible photo of this tropical island in the newspaper. It's like this perfect, the most perfect island you've ever seen. So I cut it out of the newspaper. It didn't say where it was. And I taped it to the dashboard of my Jeep Wrangler when I was like going to college. And so I would always, whenever I flipped down my visor, I would see this incredible island. And I had no idea where it was. It was just like a place I wanted to find one day sometime down the line. And when I got out of college, I was doing a little bit of backpacking and doing some digital nomad stuff, working online. And I ended up in San Pedro down in Belize. And I went and scuba dived the Blue Hole and got out. And some guy's like, hey, you want to just go kind of island hop for a while? I'm like, yeah, sure. Picked up 6-pack of beer. This guy just takes me out and like just goes. And I'm like, where are we going? I see nothing, right? And all of a sudden, like an hour and a half, 2 hours after being on the boat, seeing the horizon, this island emerging. And as we're pulling up to this island, I'm like, holy shit, that's the island. That is the island I've been staring at in my car for the last 6 years, every single day when I drive. That's the island. And I was just like, it was just this incredible feeling I'll never forget.
That is incredible. Yeah. I have a crazy story on the note of The Secret and Belize, because one of the authors, a lady named Susan Morris, she actually invested in Belize. She basically took her kind of last funds, something most people don't know. Back in the day, there was some offshore oil drilling in Belize and some small, oil reserves in Belize. She took, I think it was about $1 million down to Belize. She had enough to drill for a couple shots, and she actually struck oil and made a huge hit. And we were at a wedding just south of my place on the island. It must have been about a year ago now. And Susan Morris was at the wedding, and we hung out with her that whole night. We talked about the secret. So that's crazy, man. I love that story. Wow.
Interesting people, huh?
Yeah.
Very cool. So kind of on that note, like what's the scene like for expats down there? Do you get a bunch of digital nomads? Is it mostly retirement people?
So it's pretty mixed right now. Like the digital nomad thing is really just kicking off. Like we're seeing more shared workspaces right now. In my opinion, I'd say that's a pretty big opportunity in the market, because obviously there's a massive growth in this digital nomad lifestyle where people are moving abroad and they're looking, you know, they can work remotely now with the internet being so prominent and more tech jobs emerging. A lot of people are saying, why am I sitting, you know, like me up in Canada when I could be down in the Caribbean doing the same thing remotely? So there's a huge opportunity for that. We do have a couple younger groups emerging on Ambergris Key and Key Cocker and stuff. But in terms of older baby boomers and expats, we have one of the fastest growing areas in the whole Caribbean. You know, the baby boomers, it's the largest demographic shift in human history. Mm-hmm. I think the number is roughly 11,000 US baby boomers retiring per day for the next 10 years. So we're talking about a massive wave, right? And we've become a major recipient of these people, and it's a huge impact on our market. But I know you were mentioning before you did some digital nomad stuff. So it is it's kind of a really big emerging presence in Belize now.
Yeah, it's so accessible from North America. I mean, right now, the major hubs for digital nomads, Medellin, Bali, Chiang Mai, Thailand, but two of those are obviously very, very far away for North America anyways. It's nice to have a couple of destinations that are, you know, within a tour. For me in Tampa, Playa del Carmen, I just flew there. Cancun was an hour and 15-minute flight from Tampa. It's crazy. And from crazy. You in Toronto, yeah. You're probably like 3 hours to get down or something. But
yeah, it's about breezy. 4.5. It's easy breezy. Okay. And like we have direct flights. That's actually something we keep a pretty close eye on, because those numbers will reflect what's going to happen in our tourism market, which, like I mentioned before, it's kind of the primary driver of the real estate market. So for us, we're always keeping our finger on the pulse of, okay, which airlines are adding flights? Where are the direct flights coming from? And over the past, you know, several years, the trend has been more new direct flights, because people are seeing, okay, this is a close destination, you know, easy to access. There's a lot of reasons why Americans like to go down, with it being English speaking. You know, roughly 9% of Americans, I think, can speak a second language. So it's pretty nice when you can go down and you'd be able to communicate with everyone. And, you know, from a real estate investing perspective, you can read the legal documents. It's British common law, so it's full foreign ownership. You know, if say you cut yourself on the boat or something, you can go talk to the doctor and explain like exactly what's happening, or if you have a sore stomach, right? So there's a lot of big factors that come from it being close and it being English speaking.
Interesting. So I had no idea that any of those countries were English speaking down there. Belize must be the only one that I can think of, right?
Yeah, in Central America, pretty much. And like, the biggest impact for me when I was kind of looking abroad, okay, which markets do I want to invest in? It's very important to find a strong legal system, right? Somewhere where you know your property rights are going to be held and you can actually own the property. When you look at Belize, obviously it used to be a British colony, it used to be part of Britain. So our legal system is based on British common law. From that, we've inherited full foreign ownership. You can have your name on the title of your real estate. If you have a company, you can have the company's name. But if you contrast that to other countries in the region, like Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, their legal system is based on Napoleonic civil law. So that's a two-tier ownership structure where foreigners and locals do not have the same ownership rights. So by default, just from that, a lot of people look at Belize and say, wow, you know, this makes sense for me to go down and check this out.
Yeah. And how about mentioned the language, how about the currency down there?
So the currency is the Belize dollar, but you know, Americans really love this. You can pay with US dollars anywhere you go, pretty much. Everyone takes credit cards. So it's kind of developed in that sense. The Belize dollar is pegged 2-1, 2 Belize dollars for 1 US dollar. I'm not sure, but it was probably the same when you were down last. Nothing is, you know, not much has changed. There's been a significant amount of development, which has driven us forward. But in terms of those kind of base things, it's very similar to when you were down.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Now, Will, how would you compare San Pedro and Ambergris Key? I always say K. It's Key.
It's Ambergris. Tough, man. You got to get.
I can't speak any. I can't say any of these words. Chetamule.
Ambergris Key. All these random things. Who's coming up with these, man?
Oh man, make it easy amazing. For me. Yeah. So those would be like. Would those be the two biggest islands, the most popular islands?
So San Pedro is actually on the southern tip of Ambergris Key. It's the town. But it's a really good question, because when you look at, like, a lot of people ask me from a real estate perspective, they want to know, where is this island at in the scheme of development, right? You know, is Ambergris Key fully developed? At the very southern tip of the island, if you look on Google Earth or somewhere, you'll see that's where San Pedro Town is located. But most of the development now has to push north from there, because for the most part, that area is fully developed. So a lot of the things are pushing north on the island. The very northern tip of the island is a national park. This is probably the hardest thing to pronounce, Sam. So if you can't get Ambergris Key, this one we're both doomed on, man. It's the Boca Bockler Chica National Park. And don't quote me 100% on that, because I might have messed that up. But Ambergris Key is technically part of San Pedro. Then when you go south, there's more of these sweet little islands. And I'm not sure when you were down if you got to just kind of boat around and island hop, but I hope you did, man, because that's a really, really cool experience.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was just on a boat last weekend in Tampa in the intercoastal, and you're sitting out there and you kind of get the breeze from feels like almost every direction. And that's the thing with Florida is, like, if you're going to live in Florida, you have to be within two blocks of the beach, because if you're not, you're never going to go to the beach and you're never going to get the benefit. If you're 2 miles inland or in the center of the state, it's like you just get the humidity and none of the good stuff.
Oh, for sure. And the summers in Florida.
Oh, brutal. So hot. Absolutely brutal. Yeah. But I remember being in Belize. I mean, of course, you're going to have hot summers as well, although I think it's a little bit more it doesn't have as much of a variation as Florida. It's like kind of more the same all year round a little bit. Yeah, but I do remember summer. Like when you're on the islands, you get this incredible breeze. And I just remember how nice it is, like being there, laying in a hammock and getting that breeze. It's like a feeling that you can't replace very easily.
No, it's just the perfect feeling. You wake up in the morning. There's only like a handful of days we don't have that breeze. It's very consistent throughout the year, like you said. And the nice thing about the island is it's really only a few miles long. So most places on the island, we also don't have a lot of really high structures. For the most part, no structures are above 3 stories. So you'll feel that breeze in most places on the island. Another kind of interesting thing, I know you're talking about, you know, if you're not close to the beach in Florida, you're probably not going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Something that's kind of unique about Belize is that all the beaches are public access. It's a 66-foot beach reserve. So, you know, even if you are a couple blocks in from the beach, oftentimes people will just walk down and hang out on the beach. Cause like you said, you hang out in one of those hammocks. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, take us through kind of a day in the life down there when you're living down there. Obviously you're still in the prime and peak of your career. And you're still doing a lot of development and stuff. But other than that, you know, a lot of water sports, a lot of seafood. Take us through some of the highlights.
You know what the funniest thing is, man? I get this question every time someone, you know, comes down to Belize. One of my friends, some investors we're working with, they're like, why are you not very tanned? I'm like, well, I'm not on the beach very often because we work pretty hard right now because there's just a lot going on. But my typical day is very different than the typical day of a tourist, because we're going around, we're looking at different developments that are taking place on the island. We're on the boat, but if we're on the boat, we're kind of A to B, going to check out what's happening at one of our developments, or going to basically, you know, make sure the wheels are still turning. But if it's a day when I have some buddies down on the island and we say, you know what, today we're just going to kick back, usually what we'll do, we'll hop on the boat, like I was talking about before, go find a nice kind of private inlet, catch some fish, maybe catch a couple lobster. You can go to a little beach cookout. There's just nothing better than going and finding a private beach and doing a cookout like that. Maybe we'll go snorkeling off the reef, go for a dive. It's kind of crazy just having these things at your fingertips, and being down in Belize so much, you almost don't appreciate it enough. So it's actually good for me to go on these kind of presentations abroad, because when I get back, I always take a step back and just, you know, realize how lucky I am to be spending this much time in Belize.
Yeah. And at what point of your day do you transition to having beers with McAfee?
Oh man, that is the more interesting story of Belize. It never happened, and I'm happy about that because the guy is certified crazy, but that was one of the more interesting stories to come out of Belize.
Yeah, probably put Belize on the map for a lot of people just watching that documentary.
Oh, for sure, man. Like McAfee, and the crazy thing is he's back in the U.S. now, mm-hmm. and he's running for, was running for Libertarian Party. I think he finished third in the running. So like somehow this guy continues to go places and influence people in a way. It's just fascinating, man. Like, well, he left the island. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, what, he's basically exiled from Belize at this point, right?
So he's fully exiled. And when he left, he kind of snuck out of the country because I think the U.S. was trying to extradite him. And he found a guy who would boat him into Guatemala. So he got on the boat. He went down to Guatemala. When he got to Guatemala, he was hanging out. And Vice wanted to do an interview. The way he actually got caught, when Vice did the interview, they took a photo of him and the interviewer put it on the Vice article, and the feds looked at that. The photo was still geotagged. They didn't remove the geotag. So then they said, boom,
no,
we know where he is. Yeah. Yeah, man. Wow. So that's how he actually got taken out.
What happened to his, what happened to his house or where his house was located?
His house is on the island. He has a few. So he was in a few different areas. Literally, I'll boat by his house almost every day. And when he left the country, he liquidated all of his assets. Myself and some investors actually picked up his airplane hangar because he was just fire sailing. Like, he just wanted out of Belize. So.
Did you find anything else in the airplane hangar?
No, like, it was cleaned out.
Any hidden stashes
of anything? Man, I don't want to find anything McAfee has to do with. Right. I like to behave.
Anything he touched in that regard.
No. Yeah, exactly. But that was one of the crazier things.
Well, that kind of also leads into another question just about crime. How's that on the island? Is there any major problems?
Yeah, really, really important question. Obviously, when people are looking at, traveling abroad or investing abroad, they want to know what's the lay of the land. So very, very important question. When you look at Belize, sometimes you'll see these headlines where there's, some type of violent crime that's very dangerous. But a really important thing to note is that roughly 91% of the violent crime in Belize takes place in the south side of Belize City. Mm. So when we're on the island, kind of the major crime we're looking at, like I said, I've been visiting Belize my entire life. So even as like a 7-year-old child, I would walk around barefoot and go catch lizards. And there hasn't been a single time on that island that I've felt threatened or in danger. For the most part, the major crime we have on the island is someone getting drunk and hopping in the wrong golf cart and then carting themselves home, then they wake up the next morning and you realize you got your buddy's golf cart instead of yours. So
like, someone's filed that it's been stolen and it's like a big deal on the island or something.
They'll just walk down the street and find it. Yeah. Like everybody on the island drives golf carts too. I should probably mention that because people are probably listening thinking, why is this guy driving a golf cart? That's kind of the standard on the island. Everyone's kicking around.
Real estate
on
development's really slow right now, so I traded in the Benz for a golf cart, but things will pick back up soon.
Listen, man, my golf cart has the spinners on it. It's completely pimped out.
I love it. I love it. Well, before we transition into more of the specific stuff about Belize real estate, curious just to get kind of a quick intro to how you got how you got started, how you cut your teeth in property and what you've been doing down in Belize on that side.
For sure, man. So basically, I started out working in Canada actually for a publicly traded company. It's the second largest multifamily company in Canada. It's called Main Street Equity. I worked in kind of all different aspects with them. I worked in acquisitions, property management, leasing. I worked very closely with a gentleman who's a very good mentor of mine now, Bob Dylan, not the singer Bob Dylan, but he's a pretty successful businessman in Canada. He's the CEO of Main Street. So kind of learned a lot of what I wanted to do from him, and he kind of advised me. Then the transition was pretty natural with me being a young guy. I wanted to get out and experience stuff before I'm too tied down. Belize kind of checked all those boxes. So I said, you know what, let's try to implement some of the stuff that I learned there down in Belize. And it's really been the perfect market because not only are we emerging right now, so there's a lot of more affordable properties when I was starting out, but B, there's just so many different types of real estate that I can invest in down here, commercial properties. I've done some residential development. I've done some real estate syndication down here. So pretty much all different types. One of the more interesting things that myself and my team worked on They do prefab homes, these Mennonite guys. So I'm not sure if you know what a Mennonite or a Hutterite is.
I do not know either, no. I know prefab.
Okay, so these Mennonite guys are like the guys that ride around. They're like Amish. The guys that ride around on horse-drawn carriages. They don't really use technology, stuff like that.
Cool.
So there's a big Amish or Mennonite population in Belize, and these guys are some of the hardest workers. They build stuff prefab for extremely affordable prices, and they're very hardworking. They deliver on time. So kind of toured around the mainland with myself and some of my team, met with all of these different Mennonite builders, and we've acquired some prefab Belizean hardwood rental units from them. And they prefab these things, barge them into the island. And I swear, I was almost having a heart attack watching a house come in on a barge on a truck.
Wow.
And then them drive it into my lots that we were planting these things on. There's actually a video of this on my YouTube channel, but I'm sitting there thinking, I'm insane. What have I done? This is crazy. But now it's kind of a standard thing that's emerging on the island. People are like, oh, well, we can buy these prefabs and bring them in on a barge. Yeah, this is great. So I think we broke the sound barrier on that a little bit.
Wow. So who would live in the prefab, or is it like a vacation rental or some other type of use?
Yeah. So for us, we don't really have, like, there is a huge potential for a nightly rental market. And I'm sure a lot of people now are going to develop stuff to respond to that demand. Mm-hmm. But the reason we have that significant demand is because investors in San Pedro and Ambergris Key make such a higher return on a nightly basis, right? And just to kind of set the table for why that is, when we're looking at our returns, obviously it comes down to our occupancy rates and our rental rates, right? Mm-hmm. How many people are coming down? What occupancy rate at what price can we get? So when you look at the development of the island and our increase in inventory, we haven't seen a significant increase in unit count on the island. And that's really because there's no kind of big developer financing in Belize. There's no really formal bank financing. So we haven't had a massive growth of new inventory on the island. That's why doing projects like these new builds is so successful, because our growth in inventory, I think we've gone like 30 new rental units over the past 5 years, something in that range. And with tourism growing at double digit rates every year, if you go online and check out, you know, several hotels on the island, you'll see they're pretty expensive. And that's because a lot of people want to come down and there's just not a ton of nightly rentals. So not many people will do a monthly rental. Most people are going to say, you know what, let's put this in a nightly market. So that's what we did with those. But we do want to do some monthly now, just because so many people are looking at the island and they say, you know, is there anything I can rent on a monthly basis? And obviously, if there's a demand for that, somebody's going to come in and respond to that.
So for the typical listener, what are the kind of go-to opportunities down there? I've done a couple episodes on Airbnb models. It seems like there's a lot of interest in people acquiring a unit and then monetizing it through Airbnb or VRBO. There's a property in Thailand that I bought down in Phuket that's basically like a resort where you buy a unit in a resort, they rent it out, manage it completely for you, send you a check at the end of the year. That's been very good for me. So what are the opportunities down there for someone who says, I got, you know, between $200,000 and $500,000 and I want to get in the game?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing that you would want to kind of drill down on is this 100% a financial investment, or am I thinking I want to spend maybe a month of the year or something in Belize, right? Because if it's a 100% financial investment, something like what you just talked about, what you did in Thailand, where you invest in a hotel that's going to manage your unit, or you buy a lot and build units on it in a development with management in place. Because a lot of people really, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, they have investment properties in whatever city they're located in. So they don't want to be exactly managing a property in Belize. That's why something like that makes a lot of sense. Something a lot of people are looking at right now, looking at maybe a larger development that's on the island where they could acquire a lot and build multiple units on that lot. Because A, like we talked about before, there hasn't been a huge growth in new inventory. But the secondary thing behind that is if you have three small wood cabanas on a lot versus one condo, you're going to have a significantly higher return because you have three units you're renting as opposed to one. So I would say that's kind of the biggest thing people are looking at right now. Some people just kind of want to get, you know, any property on the island just because they see what's happening. So some people are investing to buy and hold. Some people, if they're looking to spend more time in Belize and want a condo, they'll maybe get something where they live in it for 6 months and the management's going to handle it for the other 6 months. Mm. So it's, I guess, a pretty big wide array there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess, are there the opportunity to invest in properties, like I mentioned, the one in Thailand, where it's basically like a resort, you buy a unit and it's fully managed? Are there that type of properties in Belize? Because I haven't found those in too many places.
Yeah, there are. And that's a big, big thing that people are investing in right now. There's, you know, most actually resort developments on the island have that option. Mm-hmm. Because so many people, when they're looking at it, they want to have some income from their property. Some people are, you know, spending the entire year in Belize, but even a lot of the expats or digital nomads, they're not going to be there for the full year. They like to go back and see their friends in the summer, maybe, or, you know, spend some time there, some time in Belize. So that is a huge thing. Like you talked about what you're doing in Thailand. I would say that's kind of the primary way people are investing in this market right now, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah, I kind of took a leap of faith doing it in Thailand. It ended up, the year one and two were pretty rough, but year three was good. It yielded like 7%, and I got to go down and use it for 3 weeks. But it was so seamless in terms of the management. Or I literally don't think about it, have to answer one email the entire year. And at the end of the year, they send me a report and a check. I'm like, wow, that's almost as easy as a bank CD, you know?
That's great.
So
that's great. Do you use yours at all, or is it 100% investment?
Are you able to stay in it? Yeah, I mean, I get it 3 weeks, 3 weeks a year. So I wasn't able to use it last year, but I sent a friend down to be able to use it. So it's cool because it's also, if I'm not able to use it, I can have friends and family go use it. So I'm looking to do more of that because I think it's, I would like to maybe have an extra 2 weeks, but that's all negotiable. Like if I stay in that one an extra 2 weeks, I just have to pay like the base cleaning fee and a very little room rate, but you know, it comes out of my earnings, but I love it. I think that model is awesome. I think there's a lot of ways that model can go wrong. I've seen that model go wrong in Thailand, but this one happened to work out well. So I'm very pleased. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to do your due diligence and see that it's going to be something that is going to deliver. You know, who is the property management that's in place? Is it Joe Schmo and his friends, or is it a professional management team that's going to make sure that your units are being rented, and someone who's reputable, right? So those are kind of the key things I'm sure you checked for on what you did in Thailand. But that's really cool, man.
No, I didn't check anything. I actually did the deal when I was drunk at a bar, and I met the developer. They hadn't even broke ground yet. I'm like, what if I buy the first unit right now? Will you give me a really good deal? He's like, I can have my assistant come over and bring our credit card machine. If you swipe right now, I'll give you the best deal and a free furniture package. I'm like, done. Let's do it. And that's probably one in 50 opportunity that ended up going well. And I've done ones where I've done due diligence and they haven't gone well. But yeah, that's a funny story. And I did get a really good deal. Deals. I did get a really good deal.
Sweet, man. Dude, that's a legendary move. I guess a lot of the best deals are handshake deals that are done at bars. I don't know.
Sometimes you just gotta have one or two of those.
So legendary.
Well, what's the range kind of, let's say, 1 to 2 bedroom condo townhome that's on the, you know, on the island? What would be kind of the price range that those are going for right now?
So in terms of kind of a beachfront condo, they're starting at about $250,000. If you're looking at, you know, the prices in Belize, it's also important to kind of note that beachfront real estate is usually sold per linear foot. On the east coast of the island, that's the side where the reef is located, and most of the development has taken place. The price per linear foot is about $9,000 per foot. If you look at the west coast, which is usually kind of the more desirable location because you have the sunset views, because we have the reef on the east coast, we've kind of had a reverse development on the island. So the west coast is actually cheaper, and the price per linear foot on the west coast is about $4,000. If you're looking at, you know, the range for condos, though, I would say starting at $250,000 all the way up to, you know, king penthouses that are a lot more than that, or big beachfront villas that are going for $3 million. Hmm. Another kind of important stat is the price on new builds. So the Mennonite units that I did, they're some of the more affordable build costs. Those are in a range of about $65 to $85 a foot to build. There's a lot of amazing reputable builders on the island, Belizean guys, American guys, Canadian guys. And depending on what you're building from, what are your materials, what are your finishings, range with those guys is usually about $100 to $300 a foot. So a lot of people are looking to do a new build right now, just because, like I said, we don't have a ton of growth in the market because of those kind of financing restraints we have.
Now, I'm not a real estate developer, so I have limited knowledge in this, but $100 a square foot is very reasonable, right? Like, you could never find that in North America.
It's pretty reasonable. I'm not 100% if you could. I just know that a lot of these guys, they build to a pretty high standard. Like, sometimes if you get a Belizean guy, obviously the restrictions and restraints, you know, all the permits you need to get, it's a lot less tedious than it is in the US. But I always like to work with some pretty high quality American or Canadian guys on my team. Mm-hmm. Like a gentleman, an architect out of South Carolina, Cooter Ramsey, also does construction management on the island. Any new developments I have, I always bring him in and I just say, look, you know, I don't mind bringing the build cost up a little bit here. Just make sure we're up to US standards on this project and stuff like that. So the nice thing about it is, though, you really have a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm.
And is there much beachfront lots available? I'm thinking right now, Belize, go pick up a nice lot right there, get that sea breeze, get my hammock, my palm trees, kind of a little tutu cottage. Are there many lots like that available?
Yeah, for sure. There's a significant amount of beachfront, depending on where you're looking. Like, in the kind of, and it depends on what your budget is too. Like, you know, if some people really want that beachfront lot and they don't mind paying a little premium for it, for sure, there's some really nice deals that are on the beachfront. Other people might look at it and say, you know what, this is a strictly financial investment. The beaches are public access. Maybe I'll pick up a second or third row lot or a lot a little bit of a ways back and build my, you know, small rental units on that property without paying 10x the price. But if you're looking at beachfront, the opportunities are available. If you're looking at something off the beach, it's available. It's really an exciting time right now in that we have a wide array of options available. And like I said, that's kind of why my portfolio is so diverse on the island, because, you know, you'll see a opportunity for a small commercial project and it's like, well, I've never done that before, but this kind of just makes sense. This is an area where there's a strong growth in the tourists that are visiting. I can see someone that would be, you know, using shops here. So, you know, you'll have the ability to find tenants and you can kind of just go with the flow, which is nice.
And what do you do when you're down there, Will? Do you have your own residence?
Yeah, I've got a condo. So when I'm down, I stay in my place. I don't rent my place on the side just because I keep all my personal stuff in there. And, you know, my rental units are kind of on the side of that. We have a couple extra guest house for when buddies come down, which, you know, amazing thing. When you live in Belize, you become 100 times more popular. Like, back in Canada, nobody liked me. I was the least popular guy. All of a sudden, down in Belize, my phone is ringing nonstop. Hey, can I come stay at your... Yeah, sure. Come crash on the couch. We actually have one guy on our team. He was a commercial real estate broker in Calgary, Alberta, which is a miserably cold place. It's where I grew up. He hit me up one day. He's like, 100%. I just need a vacation. Can I come down? I was like, no worries, bro. Come down, visit me. He landed. He's like, all right, we're not looking at any real estate this trip. This is a purely vacation. By like day two, we're going around looking at deals together. By day three, he's like, that's it. I'm coming down full time. And now he's on our team full time. So
wow. Yeah, I could see that amazing happening.
You're way more popular.
That's funny. And just with the Airbnb opportunity, is Airbnb popular down there, or is it VRBO or anything else?
So for the properties that I own that I'm renting on a nightly basis, I put all of them on Airbnb and VRBO, just because it's better to cast a wider net. I'd say about 75% of the bookings come through Airbnb. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just more popular for people in the region. But both are being implemented. Have you done a lot of vacation stuff up north at all? Or
Like actually buying units and renting them out?
Yeah.
I used to do it for, I have five condos in Thailand. I tried it for a while there, but you could only rent them for like $30 a night. And then you just get a bunch of people with kind of small budgets and big attitudes complaining about everything. So I just stopped doing it. So I only rent those long term now.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's the worst, right? That's the last thing you want. And it's kind of interesting to contrast Belize to that. Mm-hmm. Our standard traveler is not like a younger person. Like, I know a lot of my friends that go to Thailand, they want to go on a budget. A lot of the people that come to the island, they understand that they're going to pay a premium price because that's just the way it is right now. There is not a lot of inventory and they have such a strong connection to the island that they're willing to pay that. So we don't really have that problem as much. I guess it's kind of more young travelers are coming in, and when they do come, they're kind of like, well, I could go to Thailand and it's cheaper, but there's such a strong, you know, group of travelers and growing group that we really haven't experienced that in our market as much. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of, that's interesting though.
Yeah. What kind of returns can you realize if you're just making it a financial transaction, picking up a condo and just putting it up for nightly rental on Airbnb? I know that's a broad question, a broad range, but like, you know, what could you expect if you went down there and put in enough time to find a good deal?
You know, it's a broad range, obviously. Like, I never like to pin down a specific number because then someone might come to Belize and be like, well, I did this deal and I didn't hit that number. But like some deals, you'll home run them, and other deals, they might not pan out as well. But I guess a standard return on the island would be around 15%, something in that range. Obviously, there's deals that you can do that you'll do much better than that, right? Like, it just depends what you're looking at and, you know, how you're maneuvering the deal. There's one thing that we have on the island. There's no MLS in Belize. So there's a lot of inefficiencies in the market, right? And I feel as an investor, I love that because that means I can find deals and put offers out on deals where I'm getting a significantly lower price for that property. And I know, because, you know, you're familiar with a little bit of research in the area, what your occupancy rate is. I always like to go around to hotels that are around any property I'm investing in and just get an idea. Okay, what are you renting for right now? What's your occupancy rate been? Like, these guys don't really withhold that information because they don't think anything of it. They just tell you. So there's very easy ways to kind of get an understanding and good grip on the market just by looking at what hotels are available and what their occupancy rates are.
I like it. I like the intelligence digging.
Yeah, man, you got to do it. I mean, I'm Sam, you got to come down to Belize, man, and let's just do a deal at a bar. I don't know. We'll find a random guy.
Yeah, hey, I'm your Huckleberry.
I want to take your approach, man.
Am I the buyer or the seller?
I don't know what we'll be.
Can I be the seller this time?
let's decide after we've had a 12-pack. You and I will we'll find someone. We'll be.
You know, I got to bring this guy on the show, actually. His name's Danny. I was 26 when we did the deal. He was 26. And he was half Thai, half Belgian. And I said, as part of the deal, I want to know, after the deal gets done, or after, you know, buy the unit, they build everything up and finish, you know, sell all the units, I want to have access to all the financial statements because I want to know exactly how much money you can make doing something like this. And he's like, yeah, sure. I have no problem with that. So he still owes me that. And I would like to see that because that would be really interesting.
That's amazing, man. I don't know what's more crazy, that you did a deal, handshake deal at a bar, or the fact that you found a Thai Belgium guy. Because I think that might be the most rare combo in the world.
That's right. That's right. It's very unique, very exotic.
You guys, you could have eaten a pad Thai for dinner and have waffles for dessert. It's a great combo.
I like that. Well, Will, you're going to have to one up him and give me a better deal down in Belize. I'll come down and shake that hand over. Instead of 6 mojitos, we'll do 7 mojitos and we'll find something lucrative down there to do.
I love it, man. 100%. And I love that you're picking mojitos. That's my drink of choice too.
All right. All right. Well, what's, you know, just kind of closing up the real estate opportunity. I'm not sure how it is in Canada. In the US, we have property tax. So if you own $1 million, let's say a residence appraised at $1 million, you might have to pay $15,000, $20,000 on that a year to the state. And actually in Thailand, there is no property tax, which I thought was amazing. But what's the scene like in Belize for taxes?
So just to give you kind of a little breakdown, we have no capital gains tax. We have no estate tax. Property taxes are extremely low. So they're a little bit higher than none. If you look at kind of the average size vacant lot on the island, it'd be about $75 a year, paid once per year in April. If you're looking at like a 1500 square foot condo on the beach, you're looking at about, you know, $300 a year. So it's pretty much marginal. In some cases, you'll have HOA fees with the development. If you're just buying a vacant lot, you usually won't have that or any additional carrying costs. But when you're looking at a development that's going to be professionally managed, usually you'll have some sort of maintenance fee just because they want to make sure the landscape of the property and development, you know, isn't going to shit pretty much. So
yeah,
in those cases, you'll have those HOA fees in place. But overall, the lay of the land on property taxes is extremely favorable for investors, just like Thailand by the sounds of it.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, that seems very reasonable. And I'm sure that's piqued the interest of a lot more people now. What other opportunities? I know you mentioned when we were catching up before that you guys have a kind of like a field trip almost down to Belize, just showing people the lay of the land. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So yeah, we basically do a monthly investor field trip. Anyone who's interested in the market, they can come down. It's 100% educational. So, you know, some people might have something where they bring you down and they push a development on you. That is not our objective at all. We want to educate you on the market. We bring in some amazing guest speakers, builders, architects. Last field trip we did, we had the mayor of Belize City come in. We've had the Minister of Tourism speak before. So really the objective is to take someone's level of knowledge with regards to Belize and the real estate market from zero to as high as we can get it over the course of a weekend, and also show them a variety of different investment opportunities. So that's something we're really excited on. Our next one is May 17th to the 20th. I'm not sure when you're putting this out, but if you're available, man, you should come down and join us on that.
Oh man, I'll be in New Jersey, but I do want to get down there. I was actually,
we'll make it happen.
Yeah. We'll make it happen. There's, I was at, you mentioned shared office earlier and I was looking down there cause I have an aggregator called coworker.com. That's all co-working spaces around the world. And I was looking at our data the other night and there was nothing in Belize and we have 170 countries represented on the platform. I'm like, oh, it must be some error. And I went through and surely enough, there was no spaces in Belize. So I did my own research and I found like one on where you live in Ambergris Key. But
yep.
For me, it seems like that there's an opportunity there. I mean, that's certainly how Medellin, Bali, and Chiang Mai have really gotten popular because internet and shared workspaces, aka co-working spaces, have kind of sprouted up to support the nomad community and remote professionals all alike. So it seems like there's an opportunity down there. And that's why I was kind of thinking, get down there and take a closer look at if there is an interesting play on that.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll make it happen. You come down, you let me know anytime. I'll show you around. We can do a full investigation into those and see if it makes sense. But you're right. There is only one of them. So
yeah. Cool, man. Well, Will, this has been a ton of fun. It's definitely got me amped up to revisit Central America and especially Belize. Hope this has piqued the interest of a lot of listeners, and we'll leave all your material in the show notes. I guess, what's the best way for people to reach out to you if they're interested in that field trip?
I guess they can just shoot me an email. My email is will@remaxsecretbeach.com. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you can put that in the notes as well. So if they shoot me an email, we can get you all the details on that, line up a time to chat. And yeah, we'd love to have anyone down who's interested.
Oh, I side note, I saw a YouTube video that you were in and it was like you were riding, it looked like an electric surfboard or electric wakeboard of some sort.
Yes, man.
What
I
is that?
I love those things. So it's called it's a jet board, I think they call it. Actually, that's one of the tenants. I mentioned that commercial project that we did. Mm-hmm. The guy that does that is actually one of our tenants. So sometimes we'll go over there and hang out with him. He's a guy from Austin, Texas. Huge, huge bro, great guy. And yeah, we ride those things pretty often. So super fun. If anyone's on the island, they should go to Secret Beach and hop on one of those things. They're a ton of fun.
So it's basically like a surfboard and it's got some type of jet ski engine on the bottom.
Exactly. And you have like a remote in your hand that's like a little gun and you pull the trigger and this thing just rips. And they go like, I think they go like 40 miles an hour. Like maybe that's a little bit higher, but you can really rip on these things.
Sounds like I would land on some coral reef down.
it's a ton of fun, man. It's a ton of fun. If you come down, we're doing that for sure.
I love it. All right, Will, thanks for taking some time out of your day, and hopefully we'll catch up in Belize soon, but appreciate your time, and I'm sure the listeners love this.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having me on, Sam, and looking forward to anyone who's looking to come down and visit.
So what's funny is I didn't even realize, I had completely forgotten until just right now while I was talking to you that my company is registered in Belize.
Oh, I wonder how many people that happens to.
Yeah, because I've never been there. I just needed to pick somewhere to have my offshore, business, my international business company. And for whatever reason, I think just because the guy who set it up is from living in Belize. And I was like, all right, let's do it.
Well, man, you're gonna have to get down there. You know, I was reading Will's book. I received a copy of it, and it reminded me how enjoyable it is to invest in a foreign country. It's kind of like, in a way, it's a global scavenger hunt. The first property I invested in Thailand, I was 27, and man, just like trying to figure all that out and going and visiting it, and you know, learning your way through the hoops and the struggles, and then finally seeing the productive end unit that's there and either available for your use or generating income. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I could definitely see having a place down in Belize with that nice ocean breeze, lobster, and cheap beer. Just especially if you're spending a lot of time in the States or Canada, in Will's case, getting down there pretty frequently and just enjoying it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think the one thing that made my ears perk up and thinking, like, you know what, maybe this would be a cool place, is the fact that they speak English as their native language there.
That is so appealing to so many people. For me, it's a little too close to home. I like it exotic, foreign.
Yeah.
You know, I like feeling a little bit of the odd one out, which I'm sure you still would when you're down there. But yeah, I love being a country. You know, it's great when you're in a coffee shop in a foreign country that doesn't speak your native language. You find this incredible peace because you can't eavesdrop on everybody. So like if you're in China, it's loud and there's lots of commotion. There's 50 conversations going on. You can't understand any of them. And it gives you this kind
unfortunately,
of
I can. Peace. And it drives me nuts being able to understand them.
Oh, that would be terrible. That's actually the reason why I purposely not decided to learn Thai after spending so many years in Thailand. Because I just didn't want to know what everyone was saying all the time. I just like not having to pick up on that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, but ignorance sometimes is bliss, especially when you can just not hear the gossip or the negative parts. You're just like, oh, life is great.
Especially when it's conversations in Mandarin.
Oh, my God. Well, the only good thing about it is whenever there's really like loud, obnoxious Chinese tourists, I'll just say to them in Mandarin, hey, you're being rude, keep your voice down. And they'll be so shocked and surprised because like they're just – first off, like a lot of times they just don't realize that they're being rude. That's just part of the culture in mainland China. Mm-hmm. It's just to be super loud and obnoxious. And when someone says it to them, they're like, oh, crap, I am. You know, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize. And they kind of lose face. They get embarrassed and they just shut up.
Yeah, maybe you could teach me a word or two. But what I do when they come to Thailand all the time in droves and they always cut the lines. So I just walk up to them and I touch them on the shoulder and I go, ni bu hao, ni bu hao. That's good enough, right?
Yeah, like, you can definitely
lose face with that, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. But or I just show them on Google Translate, like, you know, hey, you're being rude, like don't do that. And like I think the problem is people roll their eyes or they like, you know, talk behind their back, mm-hmm. but then they don't learn. Like people don't realize what they're doing. But so
I can remember a few confrontations you and I got in Eastern Europe on our trip up to Ukraine, with people like driving, cutting us off in parking lots and stuff.
Yeah, man, well, you know what? It is fun.
You got to. People need to be called out.
Yeah, but this is why I'm learning how to speak Russian. It's taking a little bit longer than I expected, but I think it'll be worth it.
But I'm fired up to get down to Belize and see what the operation is down there. I've always wanted to go back since I went last time. And actually, I mentioned this on the episode, but I didn't realize how close it is to a major destination in Mexico, being Cancun, Playa del Carmen, and Tulum. And that whole Yucatan Peninsula, that whole area of Quintana Roo is really blowing up.
Yeah, I've heard that. And that's why we're having the next Nomad Summit in Cancun, right next to Playa del Carmen.
Yeah. So that's Playa del Carmen. What month is that?
It's going to be October, the weekend of October 13th. We're going to have the Nomad Summit in Cancun. And then the Wednesday after, we're all going to head down to Playa del Carmen and spend like a month there, just hang out.
Wow, that's cool. I did a month in Playa del Carmen a year and a half ago. I really enjoyed it. The only thing, it was just missing good workspace, good internet, and good coffee. And if they nail those things, they have a much brighter future for remote professionals and digital nomads. But hey, maybe if we should go down to Belize after that, just do an extended trip, or we could just do a road trip down there during the month in Playa del Carmen.
Yeah, maybe we can do that. Because, yeah, I'm looking it up right now. Ambrose K to Playa. Let's see how long it takes. Because it looks like it's an island, but it looks like you can drive there? Or
I think
maybe
you can drive there.
A ferry? No,
for sure
here's
you can
a
take
problem.
A ferry.
Okay, so here's the well, I don't know. Google Maps probably doesn't actually know. But Google Maps wants you to first go to Blue City and then back up. But I wonder if there's a way to go straight up, because if you can just cut straight up, it'd be so much faster. But maybe there's no road. Maybe you have to go down. But even then, it's only 8.5 hours.
Yeah, you can take a taxi. I think you take a taxi to Chetumal. And then how I got there is I took a ferry from Chetumal, Mexico, down to Belize City.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that would be easy then.
I think the ferry goes from Chetumal directly to the islands. So you can skip Belize City. The only team you need to go to Belize City is possibly if you're departing from Belize City, or you take the ferry back to Mexico and you can fly out of Cancun, something like that.
Okay. Well, either way, it sounds cool. The thing I really didn't like about Utila, besides this crappy dive shop, was even though the beaches are beautiful to look at, because they're white sand beaches, they're deserted, they're just like picturesque, it turns out the reason why there's no one on those beaches is because there are sand flies on there. And I didn't know what a sand fly was until I got there. But I think the locals call them the no-see-ums. But they're basically like invisible mosquitoes that are 10 times worse.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of big-time drug deal stuff going on in Utila. So when I was there, I would see this stuff happening. All the sketchy stuff happening at, like, late at night. Like, two guys carrying these huge duffel bags from like a dingy place into a ferry boat, and they're always looking over their shoulders left and right, and this stuff was going on all the time. It gave me an uncomfortable feeling, but I didn't have that at all when I was in the islands of Belize. It was much more just kind of like Will explained it. People on golf carts chilling out, people selling lobster on the streets, drinking beers on the beach. Utila to me felt a little bit more edgy, I would say.
It was super sketch. And the worst part of it is no one ever talks about that part of it, where like I'm pretty sure that my course director, the guy that taught me diving, he was coked out of his mind on the last day. Like, he looked like a zombie. And every like third night that I was at that bar where kind of everyone hung out, some girl would get her passport stolen out of her purse, and nobody would ever talk about it. It was just like a common thing.
Ooh, don't like that. Not on a small island like Utila. Nope, not for me. Mm-mm.
Yeah. So I'm definitely not going back. But you know what? Like, Belize, I don't know. Like, it sounds like a cool place. If I was in the U.S. and it was convenient for me to make a trip down there, I would definitely take Mitchell up on that offer. If anything, if maybe you can plan something out. If any of the other bosses want to make kind of a, you know, invest like a boss group trip down there to check it out, that'd be fun.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe after your summit, we'll get a group and just go straight down. Because I might try to go down before Lithuania, but I'm leaving May 26th to Lithuania, and then I'm going to be in Europe all summer until, you know, mid-September. So no opportunities before then anyways.
You know what? Here's the plan, all right? So we'll do the Invest Like a Boss summit in September, September 28th. You can go straight from Vegas down to Belize for that week. And then on the weekend of the 13th, go from Belize over to Cancun for the Nomad Summit.
It's all dangerous, buddy. It's all dangerous.
Dude, that would be perfect.
Well, people want to know, Johnny, what's happening with Invest Like a Boss Summit? Is it on? Because people are writing in. And if we're doing this, there's only one way to do it. And that's big and bold, baby.
You know what? At first, I was like, oh, man, I just wanted, you know, to keep it simple, because it's going to be so much work to organize another one. And also the pricing, because Vegas is expensive. Like, looking at like seminar rooms, they're going to, I mean, the tickets would have to be $300+ per person, like without us making any money, like for us just to break even. And I don't know how many people are willing to pay that. So I was thinking we can either do it like at like a cheaper venue, but, you know, wouldn't be as bossy, of course, right? But what if we just got sponsors? What if we just got a bunch of exhibitors? You know, maybe we can get all the people from, like, you know, Wealthfront, Betterment, Pier Street, like people who we would recommend anyways to come out, get a booth, maybe give a short talk, and then have them cover a lot of the costs. That way people can come, we can get a nice venue, but it wouldn't cost them that much money.
What's ballpark cost, do you think, for us?
It's really hard.
Say 300 people. 250 is minimum, I think we should aim to have.
Yeah, okay. Well,
okay, 200. 200 minimum.
So basically, the way that the rooms work is it'll be about $100 per person just for the room rental because they do like a food and beverage minimum. And we can't just charge exactly – I wish we could just charge 100, but the problem is we would end up losing money if we have – let's say we book a 300-person room and only 250 show up. That means we lose $5,000, right? So we always have to charge like, let's say, 150 per person just to break even. And then there's things like the banners, the signups, the – you know, all this other stuff that comes in place. So normally you kind of have to factor in like doubling the price so that way you can include, maybe include lunch or coffee. You can include like, you know, proper name tags and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I don't know. It's they're not cheap to put on. Like,
no.
That's why it's so nice doing the Nomad Summit in Chiang Mai, because our fixed prices are so low that we can sell tickets for, you know, $150.
Well, let's send out a mailer to our list and get some stuff in Boss Lounge going. See how many people are interested. See what people are willing to spend. Like, we don't need to make money on it. Just kind of like the Chiang Mai one, although it's certainly nice not to lose money on it. But man, I would just love to do this year. It's like a lot of people want to do it. We have a big enough group now. We have enough interesting people that would come and present and speak. So I want to do it, Johnny, but ultimately I got to put this one mostly on your shoulders. You're very talented in this game. You're very talented.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. Thanks for stroking the ego. All right. So if you guys are interested, do us a favor. Go in the Boss Lounge or go on our Rest Like a Boss Facebook page and just click I'm going on the Facebook group. And that way we can just get an idea of how many people want to go. I've already created a poll asking like how much people are willing to spend. And if you know of anyone who'd want to sponsor their event, have a booth or have a table, like hit us up. Let us know. I think you can email either Johnny or Sam at investlikeaboss.com and let us know your company. Here's the deal: is we will only allow sponsors for products that we would actually recommend, anyways. So you know, anyone who's been on the podcast already, we've already vetted you, so you guys are welcome to come. And any company that you know is somebody that we would be like, oh yeah, this is actually a good company, this is something we would recommend, then you guys are allowed to. But if it's some shady offer, some like shady deal, then I don't care how much you guys give us, we're not going to have you, sorry.
Yeah, and also beer. We need beer, free beer. So great opportunity to get in front of a bunch of influencers. If there's a great craft beer company that anyone's part of, I don't think I can get Black Hops to send kegs from Australia, but if anyone knows any craft brewers in the U.S. that would want to be a sponsor, basically all they didn't do is give us a few free kegs, maybe four, and we'll hang their banners up and give them lots of shout outs and love and drink all their beer, which is the best.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So tentatively, it's going to be the last weekend of September, September 28th, 29th. And I actually already bought my plane tickets back to the U.S. For that month. So I would definitely be in the U.S. I can definitely go to Vegas and then do the Nomad Summit in Cancun after, maybe with Belize in between.
Sounds good, man. Plans are shaping up for a great year.
Yeah. So let's quickly talk about Belize. I guess you'd have to just go there to see it, right? Like, what are your thoughts so far?
Well, I've been there. So the idea of, I don't know. I mean, it depends a lot to me on how much time, obviously, I spend in this time of this part of the world, right? I'm trying to set up my base in Barcelona. And of course, I love spending time in Asia. But if I end up spending more time here, you know, I like going down to that part of the world. You know, Colombia, Ecuador, Panama, Costa Rica, Belize, Mexico, even. You know, it's just a great place to visit every now and then. Get some fresh air and some wind in your sails. So so I'm definitely going to go down and take a look. I'm not trying to do any more property investing at the time, but you know, like to keep my eyes open for good opportunities. And I do think that for a lot of people that found the Airbnb episode that we did interesting, or we get a lot of people always writing in about my Thailand properties, I think this is also a great market to look at. Now, like with my Thailand properties, the jury's still out on how that all works out, right? Like the ones that I did in Chiang Mai, good, I would say. The one I did in Phuket, I would say pretty good. But now I'm in basically litigation over another one in Phuket that it's so funny, Johnny. The one that I did drunk at a bar with a handshake with a 26-year-old kid that had not even broken ground yet worked out well. And the one that I had attorneys do due diligence on and was this mega 400-unit complex that was going to be operated by Best Western premiere, and I had all these wonderful contracts and visual tours. That one's in litigation, so go figure, right? Sometimes you do everything right and it still doesn't work out. Sometimes you do everything wrong and it works out like a dream. So there's not necessarily a manuscript for doing this, but you know, I'll keep people posted on how everything shapes up in Thailand. Actually, should get my yearly report next week for that property in Thailand, so we can compare it to performance last year and see how that's all worked out. But I think that type of investment property makes a lot of sense in a country like Belize, where it's fully managed by an operator there and you can go down and use it. But other than that, it just cash flows all year.
Yeah, I can see it being a potentially really, really good opportunity, especially when he said 15%. At first, he was almost kind of like, oh, you know, I want to say it's higher, but let's be conservative, 15%. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's, you know, maybe something that we're not seeing. So definitely do your due diligence, but also maybe there's just a ton of potential opportunity because it sounds like it's a very unsaturated market. There's not enough supply for the amount of demand. So I think it's always going to be a risk going into a market like that, but there's also a ton of potential. So if I was living in the U.S. and I wanted to be able to go somewhere like Belize, you know, relatively close flight, easy to get around, maybe a potential future retirement spot, I would check it out.
For sure. And if you guys like this episode, you like this kind of deep dive into property in a foreign country, I think it's really interesting. I want to do more of it. If there's a country that you guys have in mind, write us and let us know. We'll try to find an expert that invests there and develops real estate, and we'll get them on the show and talk a little bit more about that. For anyone that's more interested in Belize, check out Will's book. It's called The Investor's Guide to Belize Real Estate. Awesome read, pretty quick. See, about 140 pages. I had a lot of fun reading through it. Kind of takes you through a visual tour of real estate. And also, it's just a great business book in general, just talking about the process of how to go about developing property, putting out business plans, getting financing, and all that stuff. So definitely recommend it.
Okay, really cool. So if you guys want to have a discussion about this, maybe chime in about both the Nomad Summit, the Invest Like a Boss Summit, as well as potentially going down to Belize as a trip, find us in the Boss Lounge. You can either go to investlikeaboss.com, click on bonus, and there's instructions there, or just search for Boss Lounge on Facebook, and you can get some instructions on how to join. Basically, if you leave us a review on iTunes, you can come in for free, or you can make a one-time $15 lifetime donation. So pretty easy to join, and let's have a chat in there.
Sounds great. And thanks, everyone, for the reviews. They've been flying in last week. We're just about to crack 200 five-star reviews in the USA. Guys, that is how we get on great guests. So please keep them coming. Take 2 minutes out of your day. If you haven't left us a review, do that. That's the best thing that you can do for us to make our day and help us to get great guests on the show.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, guys. See you all next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.